Bienvenidos. This is the Enchantment Chronicles. I am the Man of Enchantment, and with me is Drew Seadrill. Today, we're going to be talking about Lobo, the last Lobo. Drew, what do you know?
Well, you know, when you think of outlaws and bounty hunters, these might not be what occurs to you first. A band of wolves that have established such a reputation that they get a bounty of, what was it, $1,000 set upon their head after various wolf hunters had tried to capture them and failed, including a Texas Ranger and others. This band was led by the namesake Lobo, the original Lobo himself, I guess, and consisted of just a few wolves, but they certainly had an outsized impact on the cattle ranchers of Little Texas. And you've got a good sense of that geography, right, Johnny?
Little Texas is, well, we would say it's the eastern part of New Mexico, but specifically here, the Lobo is up near Clayton, up near now, if you know the map of New Mexico, there's a little slit of New Mexico up there north of Clayton. It's a few miles mm-hmm. wide. That's kind of where the Carumpa Valley is. Okay. And the Carumpa Valley is, there's a lot of small tributaries, and it goes kind of into what northern Texas, maybe Oklahoma, the northern Texas area, and that's where this guy used to hang out.
Yeah, and that watershed coming through the mountains, and Lobo, as was noted by more than one bounty hunter, was very successful at evading capture. By working through those arroyos, he'd cut away from down paths that horses couldn't follow. And in at least one case, in the case of the Texas Ranger that came out to hunt his pack, they separated through the arroyos and then rallied. They gathered again once the dogs this guy had had gotten themselves separated, and then they turned, and when they outnumbered them, killed several of his dogs and wounded several others and left him, you know, bereft of his wolfhounds. So that was why he had to turn away.
So there were a lot of folks that got called in. And so who was Lobo? Why was Lobo and his pack a problem? If I remember correctly, it was a relatively small pack. Few in number, but Lobo was a special kind of guy, and his girlfriend that we'll get to later, we know her as Blanca. But right. What was going on with Lobo and Blanca and the pack?
Well, they were extraordinary in their time. They were some of the last surviving wolves in that northern part of New Mexico. The Carumpa ranchers estimated that more than 2,000 of their finest stock had been killed over the years by this pack. And there were some exceptional wolves, in the words of Ernest Thompson Seton. He had five wolves that followed him. One was a yellow wolf of remarkable swiftness, which, according to some of the ranchers, had been seen capturing an antelope, running down an antelope on its own. And these wolves, possibly more impressively than their ability to hunt, was their ability to evade capture. Lobo was known to dig out traps and was known to cut out unpoisoned meat from carcasses after some cowboys, you know, one of the things they were trying was strychnine. And later he would even be known to defecate on poisoned carcasses as a warning to his pack to stay away. So he certainly had observed all the methods they had to eradicate these wolves and evaded them. And in the words of Ernest Thompson Seton, who would eventually be sent out there, Lobo had been educated by gunpowder to let man alone. Like many wolves.
And so we'll get into this, but Ernest Thompson Seton writes a little short story called Lobo, the King of Krumpaw. And in here, in his little short story, he talks about how this pack of wolves allegedly kills up to one animal or one livestock a day, approximately.
Right.
And so what had happened was these ranchers were getting tired of losing so many animals, and they called in many different people, and Ernest Thompson Seton accepted the challenge of $1,000 in the late 1800s, which today's value, just for what it's worth, is approximately $30,000 to $35,000, a bounty on this Lobo. Mm-hmm. So he comes out in the late 1800s. Ernest Thompson Seton comes out and says he's going to take out Mr. Lobo.
Right. And he is considered the preeminent wolf hunter at a time. His background is he was born in England. Ironically, he was named after an ancestor of his mother's from Scotland, Ernest Evans, who had supposedly helped eradicate wolves in Scotland. But his family moved to Canada when he won a gold medal from the Ontario College of Art and Design in 1879 at 18. And so he was sent to London to study for $25 a month at the Royal Academy of Arts and Science. And there he would get permission from, among other trustees, the Prince of Wales, to study famed naturalists like Audubon's art and others. And he realized that people could make their money off this. And he only gets to study in London for about 3 years before he has to head back. You know, I guess $25 a month. You figured it out earlier. $1,000 was significant, and $25 a month was still pretty significant. So he heads back, and with $3 in his pocket, he connects with Jay Fraser and becomes an illustrator. But he's encouraged to continue his scientific studies and publishes some books in 1896 and on the art and anatomy of animals and others. Briefly returns to Paris and studies art at the Julian Academy in 1890.
This guy comes from Thompson Seton comes from a relatively well-off family at the time. England has to move to Canada. He grows up kind of on the frontier of Canada, if you will. And so he's kind of caught between two worlds. And in 1893, he jumps on a train. He accepts the call for $1,000 and jumps on a train to come out to and goes through Fort Worth, Texas, and gets off at Clayton, New Mexico to try to take out Lobo and his pack. He heeds the call, if you will.
Yep, he does. They agree to provide him a horse, and they would pay for ammunition, poisons, traps, and travel expenses, $80, you know, just to hunt. And he stays there in Clayton at a boarding house that they hasten to add is run according to the highest standards, probably meaning that it wasn't a brothel.
Clayton was a pretty rockin' town, I guess. At the time, there was a bunch of stuff going on, and we've been talking about Folsom and the different areas, and people were moving in, and that was actually a stop on the Santa Fe Trail before that, and so people had been moving in and out for the previous, 60, 80 years or so. Blackjack Ketchum was up there at some point. That we'll, I'm sure, get into at some point. But he gets off and he gets into Clayton, New Mexico, and says, "Let's go."
Yeah, yeah, and as we already learned from a previous episode, that area is kind of the home to some of the largest cattle stations north of Texas at the time. So it's a booming economy, and there's enough money to be gathered that you could bring in the best. And that was Ernest Thompson Seton. He was not unsympathetic to the wolves. In fact, he kind of comes to believe that part of the reason they can evade traps is they're communicating with each other. They're passing on information. And he's also keenly aware that their natural prey had been decimated. The buffalo were gone. A lot of the deer and elk and antelope were fading, and so they didn't have a lot of choices besides to hunt cattle. And he, his sympathies, however, did not prevent him from doing his best to eliminate these wolves. And for quite a while, his best was, like others, simply not good enough. They tried various methods at first, including poisoned carcasses again. That's where Lobo revealed himself to Thompson Seton by defecating on those poisoned carcasses as if to warn the other animals away. That's certainly not a usual wolf behavior around meat. So there was some communication going on there. And Thompson Seton had no doubt about that. But eventually, he finds a weakness in Lobo. He finds that one of the wolves seems to be running alongside and running in front and running around with smaller footprints. And he concludes that Lobo has found a mate. I think his words were, "The marauder had fallen in love." Right? And so he resolves to go back and try something that he'd tried before, which was traps. But in this case, he thinks he can trap Lobo's mate because she's scampering around with him. She's running ahead. She's running back as he's reading these tracks, which is incredibly impressive to me, Johnny. I get out hiking and, I'm excited if I could tell a deer track from a horse. And he's reading these tracks and understanding what they're doing as they're playing, right?
Yeah, and I think it was a different time. There wasn't YouTube or TV or cell phones, so we understood the world a little bit differently. And I think at one point I read that this animal, Lobo, was, and the reason why you could tell it apart, this animal was so large that his paw was about 5 inches in diameter, which is pretty remarkable for a wolf. He was about 100 pounds, but his buddy, his friend, his girlfriend Blanca was a little bit smaller. And Blanca had gotten her name from the Spanish, obviously, in the area because of her coat. She looked different. But these wolves, for all intents and purposes, and we'll come to learn through his his writing, what was it called? The Lobo, the King of the Karumpa, which is just a remarkable piece because he is, how do you say, he flips the script a little bit and he's the bad guy in it. He being right. Ernest Thompson Seton is the bad guy. But he learns in this and he writes in this how he... The Lobo just had this undying, or dying rather, whichever, love for his mate, which ultimately was his downfall.
Yeah, it's truly tragic, and it's remarkable how he tells that story. You're right, and it's available online and from the Google Books archive. It's It's the first chapter of a book called Wild Animals I Have Known, and he is very explicit that in that story he has not deviated from the truth one bit in any embellishment or anything. He talks about various animals in the book. He's a remarkable writer. It becomes a bestseller, kind of sits around many a nursery and a child's reading room, I guess, in the 1900s. So it shapes a lot of people, and it shifts the narrative of wolves in general from bloodthirsty and emotionless killers, which is what he'd been brought to pursue in the valley there, to one of social animals capable of love. Right? His mate Blanca is captured by those traps. She does run ahead. And Lobo is staying with her when Ernest Thompson Seton arrives with his gun. But at that point, Lobo follows, you know, his protocols, I guess, and runs away. He knows he can't stand against a gun. He flees. So Thompson Seton kind of brutally drags Blanca's corpse along a trail, thinking that he can lure Lobo back in the hopes that he'll be able to find and somehow rescue his mate or accompany her in some way. And that works. He sets more traps along Blanca's trail, and Lobo winds up captured not in one, but four separate leg traps. And that's kind of when Ernest Thompson Seton has this turn. He comes and he sees this wolf, and there's a remarkable photograph of the wolf, and you can see how big it is. But he kind of resolves he's gonna not kill it. He'll put it on display. But Lobo refuses to eat and just kind of wastes away. He dies there. And Ernest Thompson Seton maintains that he died of a broken heart. So it's a truly tragic story, but one that really begins to shift the world's perceptions of wolves as it is popularized and spread out, and they begin to be seen more as loyal animals that are worthy of respect and protection. So, Johnny, do you want to talk a little bit more about Ernest Thompson Seton and his connection to New Mexico?
Well, after this, he decides to stick around. If I remember correctly, he came out, and this was obviously in Union County, there near Clayton, mm-hmm. which is the county seat. But mm-hmm. he decides to stick around here, and he becomes an environmentalist. Afterwards, because of Lobo, and he starts writing essays, and he ends up living in Santa Fe for a long time, buys a ranch out near, I think, near the Pecos, builds a big old house, and I think he ends up dying out there. I could be wrong, but yeah. Ernest Thompson Seton, he was how do you say, he was a big New Mexican, important New Mexican, assumed mm-hmm. New Mexican for a long time. And he died. He is cremated. He was cremated in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And mm-hmm. he died in Seton Village, New Mexico, which is outside of Santa Fe, because of Ernest Thompson Seton. And by the way, the pelt of Lobo is on display on some level at the Philmont mm-hmm. Scout Ranch Boys Scout, which is in Colfax right. County, in their museum. So I haven't seen it. I'd like to go, but it's up there somewhere. But Seton built a castle outside of Santa Fe. I haven't seen that. It was run down for a while. I think an art institute bought it and redid it on some level. But
Well, yeah, and he was a successful writer for many years. He wrote his autobiography in the 1940s, and it was being released. And he wrote the original Boy Scout Handbook, which might be the connection to the Philmont Ranch there. He's, a legendary, I guess, figure in his own right. Right?
And from what I've read, he was friends with all the big name artists at the time. I think George mm-hmm. O'Keefe and all those types of folks. He at least knew them. They were hip to each other. So
go ahead.
No, but that's who he was. He was an interesting cat, and he like many New Mexicans who don't originate here, he came here with intent, and he lived his life the way New Mexicans do, with intention, and made a life and name of himself because mm-hmm. of his experiences here.
Yeah, one of the most striking examples of someone who falls under the enchantment of the land of enchantment, right, Johnny?
I agree.
Yeah, and today we still see that impact, in places like New Mexico and Colorado, and that might be a subject for a future episode, right, Johnny? The reintroduction of the Lobo and some of the reintroduction programs going on throughout the West these days.
Certainly, and we've been seeing on the news recently references to wolves, and we've been doing it since the 70s, I think, down on the Gila, but we have, I don't know, 150, 170, 200-something packs of wolves running around, and hopefully we'll get into the impact of the wolves, and it's a pretty controversial subject. But there's a documentary out on the reintroduction of the wolves in Yellowstone. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's pretty remarkable. And if you've ever been down, I like to go down to the Gila, and I've heard the wolves howling at night. It's just an experience. It's an experience that you don't get to see much in the city.
No, I've not heard the wolves when I've been in the Gila. The last times I was camping in the Gila was shortly after their reintroductions. And, they are, they're apex predators. We reintroduced them back in 98. The Fish and Wildlife Service conducted a reintroduction with various rules, and those are still changing to this day. It certainly has been controversial. It hasn't been without its conflicts. At one point, one of the packs was led by two three-legged wolves. But that's enough for another. That's a whole other episode, Johnny, don't you think?
I think so. Let's wrap this up and
okay.
And for today. But today, it was all about Lobo, the enchanting Lobo of New Mexico, the last Lobo, which really wasn't the last, but... For all intents and purposes, the last Lobo of New Mexico.
There you go. Certainly of the Carumpaw Valley, and certainly the one that inspired the reintroduction. I will say that there is a nature documentary available on PBS that covers this, and we'll post some links to that on the website. Right, Johnny?
I hope so.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Have a good one.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.